At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. The first state-backed gold depository in the country is open for business. The Texas Tribune reports Lone Star Tangible Assets in Austin will be in charge of the precious metals depository until 2019. That's when the private storage company plans to open a bigger facility in Leander. The Tribune reports Texas Comptroller Glenn Hager was the first to use the Texas Bullion Depository after he deposited some of his personal gold this week. The state of Texas, new healthcare companies were skimping on services for some of the state's most vulnerable patients and failed to stop it. That's what the Dallas Morning News found after a year-long investigation. The newspaper looked at how Texas treats residents who rely on Medicaid, a government insurance program for the poor and disabled. The state pays private companies billions of dollars each year to arrange their care. David McSwain is a reporter with the Dallas Morning News. He talked with David Brown, host of Texas Standard.
What we're talking about is really sick children, foster children and disabled adults who in past years would have required, you know, the sort of care that you get in a nursing home. And, you know, in recent years, that home is supposed to be provided in their homes, which is cheaper for taxpayers, and it's supposed to result in better health outcomes. But the state of Texas outsourced that care to a few national multi-billion dollar companies, and we found that they're skimping on that care as they, you know, make record profits.
What were some of the other major findings of this investigation?
What we found was the state had actually started and nearly completed a study that would have shown that this is a pervasive and really a terrifying problem. But just as they had the sample they needed to figure out how many disabled adults weren't receiving things like home nursing, dementia patients weren't, they didn't have anybody around to help them know when to take their medications or go to the doctors, things like that, they chose not to run their own data. And that made it look like the problem was not nearly as bad as we found it was. And from there, we found that sort of study was never even attempted with foster children, where we found dozens of cases of really sick children being denied home nursing, physical therapy, speech therapy, things that are really meant to help them live a decent life and to either get better or stay stable. And many of those children are regressing, foster parents and caregivers have told us.
While the patients get sicker, the companies get richer.
Right. With some of the healthier kids, there's a lot to suggest, you know, they're getting immunizations more often, so they're not ending up cold, isn't turning into pneumonia as often. Mm-hmm. Those indicators look good. We're really talking about sick, vulnerable folks like foster children and then the really medically fragile.
You focus on a couple of patients in this series that way. I mentioned the little boy who suffered brain damage. What are the backstories behind those patients and the lack of care they received?
Deshaun Morris, he was basically born into foster care and placed with his foster mother, Linda Badawo, in Mesquite. And from the beginning, had a ton of health problems, couldn't eat or breathe on his own. But he was getting better. But he still required what's called a tracheostomy tube, a hole in his throat that was basically his airway. Without it, he would die. And he took to pulling it out, as babies will do when they're attached to things.
Right.
And this was a really dangerous habit. It was well documented. And both his doctor, his foster mother, all of his nurses had told Superior Health Plan that he needs round-the-clock nursing. He's pulling it at night and we're not there and he could suffocate. And the company didn't listen and the mother lost the appeal and the state didn't intervene. And ultimately, exactly what they said would happen happened. He pulls it out. He suffocates while his nurse isn't there, and they do CPR for 40 minutes, still doesn't have a pulse by the time he gets to the hospital, and he's now in a persistent vegetative state.
The governor has, and some in the legislature, have been critical of these companies for failing to serve vulnerable Texans. Texas HHS is supposed to be regulating these insurers, right? I mean, so who's dropping the ball, and can anything be done to fix the situation?
I think our series shows that everybody's dropping the ball. Top health officials have not listened to the frontline regulators who have seen these problems, the nurses who have documented them. They're not following up on cases. They're not penalizing the companies when they fail to deliver care. And lawmakers, we found, have not been listening to the parents who have been telling them this has been going on, to the nursing home health agencies and the doctors who've said, listen, this is a problem. And in fact, despite that evidence, they've pushed for more expansion. Today's story online shows lawmakers have been working behind the scenes on individual cases, but they have not sought any systemic changes. We think a powerful lobby has contributed to that.
That was Dave McSwain with the Dallas Morning News, talking with David Brown, host of Texas Standard. There's an ongoing crisis in Myanmar, formerly Burma, caused by violence against Rohingya Muslims. Many call it genocide. That's led to an exodus of hundreds of thousands of people. Some Rohingya now call North Texas home, and a local Islamic group is helping many of them. Pablo Pena reports.
Shahida Winton lost her parents when she was 13.
My father and mother died. And Burmese...
Yeah. That was almost 30 years ago. Winton escaped the violence and ended up in Texas through a refugee resettlement program. But she struggles with English. Where Winton grew up, education is forbidden, especially for women.
Don't understand English, don't read in, don't write in, and very problem.
That's why the Islamic Circle of North America in Dallas holds ESL classes, English as a second language, for Winton and other women like her, so she can perform daily tasks like shopping for food.
Shopping and don't talk, don't understand, very problem. I come in an ESL class and talk a little bit, very happy.
More Rohingya refugees have been moving to North Texas over the past few years for job opportunities and a supportive Muslim community. And many of them turn to the Islamic Circle. Zaid Hussein is the director of the Islamic Circle. He says a few years ago, they didn't serve many Rohingya refugees.
But from 2014 onwards, we started getting a bunch of them. Like every year, 50 families, 60 families. Right now, we have about 264 families, if I'm right, Rohingya families registered in our database who are seeking constant help from us.
The Islamic Circle works to provide basic needs like food, transportation, and medical assistance for Muslim refugees from all over the world, including the Rohingya who are being forced out of Myanmar. They've been described as the world's most persecuted minority. A UN official has called it ethnic cleansing, and many face some of the tallest barriers. Again, Zaid Hussein.
One of the important main challenge dealing with Rohingya is their mindset, since they are not educated.
Still, Hussein finds ways to open doors through education.
So we thought that rather than always helping them through paying their rent and providing them food, why not teach them a skill through which they can stand on their own legs?
While some refugees take classes at the Islamic Circle, others pave their own path. 20-year-old Muhammad Muhammad and his family settled in Dallas a few years ago.
They escaped the persecution that was happening in Burma. Mm-hmm. And I think my dad was like 16 years old. Around there, he went to Malaysia to seek protection for himself because there was a lot of violence going on.
Muhammad was born in Malaysia but identifies as Rohingya.
My dad don't want me to have life like him, like, you know, doing a hard labor, hard job.
Even when they escape the violence in Myanmar, the Rohingya still face discrimination in host countries like Malaysia. All Muhammad wanted was an education. So his father wrote to a resettlement program and made his son's education a priority.
He seek and he write this in paper and he send it every day. He fax them every day.
His family waited for a year and a half.
So one day they get it, the office get it. They call us, say that you have an interview for resettlement in another country. So we went there and the process went up, and then in the 6 month period they told us that we're going to America. They say you're going to USA, and we're all just like, just dream come true.
In the 4 years since his family moved to North Texas, Muhammad learned English, graduated high school, and now he's in college at the University of Texas at Arlington. Still, he's reminded of what's happening in Myanmar. Muhammad's uncle was killed in the most recent violence. Every village destroyed, every house burned down just adds to the grief. Muhammad hopes that one day things will be different for the Rohingya.
Imagine like thousands of people with education, doctors, engineers, political people. How successful will their country be? I look at that way. A peaceful society, you know.
He says he just doesn't want the Rohingya living in fear. For KERA News, I'm Pablo Pena.
Mostly clear skies in store for us later tonight with a low around 77. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 97. At 6:30, this is KERA News.